All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Wednesday, September 27th. I'm no calendar Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short, /NFL. Gets you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, MLB, NBA, so whatever away. I'm a little tilted on the calendar thing. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, me not having any way to keep track of dates or times or really anything like that, I like to consider myself like a free bird. I'm like an animal in the wild. Don't keep a schedule.
Sure. Sometimes like animals in the wild, you get bit a little bit, you know? So we do probably need to come up with some kind of system because flying by the seat of our pants from week to week is getting a little problematic, but I think we'll get there eventually.
You know? It's working fine for me. I'm here, you know? The background of this is I got a text at 9:10 this morning. Said we usually start recording these at 9 o'clock in Eastern. I got a text at 9:10. Buddy, you there? I was out just somewhere, and I was like, no. He's like, we literally just talked about this yesterday, that we had to do the podcast today, and you said yes. And I was like, got it, be home in 10. And then I flew home. Thank God I hadn't gone that far away. But
Minutes later, we realized I was going away for this weekend, which I had mentioned both 6 months ago and 1 month ago. And then you thought, oh, I thought you were just telling me, like, just that you'd be away, like no big deal. I was like, nah,
you just did tell me you're away.
Would I tell you if I was going on a vacation a month from now if it wasn't going to affect our work schedule? Just to like,
I don't know, buddy. I don't keep a calendar.
Hey, just so you know, I'm going to be away for a weekend, a little bed and breakfast. It's not going to affect my work, but I thought you might like to know, you know?
All right. Week 4 NFL cash game plays went up last night on the site. I wrote these yesterday. I got to say, the first 3 weeks, you know, writing the picks, you know, things were at least pretty crystallized, at least in two positions, let's say. Two positions would stand out as saying, like, this seems like it's going to be chalk. And then, you know, maybe two more positions was trying to, you know, weed through some of the names and some of the matchups and some of where our system had landed. I did not find that to be the case this week. I thought that everything but wide receiver to me sort of seemed up in the air. Now, you know, it's Wednesday right now, so things tend to crystallize a little bit more, but this, I don't know if that's going to really happen this week. There's some weird matchups. There's been some very inconsistent performances just kind of throughout the league, I think, which is lending itself to a little uncertainty. And I think that this week, more than any other, I think my guess is we see ownership percentages really spread out all over the place. I could be wrong about that. Again, not at wide receiver. I think actually that will be, I think we'll see some chalk there. But the other positions, I suspect we see ownerships just lower across the board in individual players, but let's get into some of these plays. So I started a quarterback. I had to start with Tom Brady. Brady is very expensive, and I'm wondering, I want to get your thoughts on the price here, because he's 9,500 on FanDuel. He's 8,000 on DraftKings. He's the most expensive player, at least the most expensive quarterback on both sides, and I believe he's the most expensive player on FanDuel. But he's expensive. He's been by far better than anybody else. 77 FanDuel points to start the year. Next closest is Alex Smith with 62. You know, where do you see Brady landing in terms of cash games? Is it worth I guess the real question is, he's great. There's no question there. Is it worth paying up all the way up for him, you think?
I think it could be, for sure. Like, I mean, we've paid similar prices for Aaron Rodgers this season, and I you know, we haven't landed similar production. It's also worth noting on Brady, he had a terrible Week 1, and so most of his fantasy production has been consolidated over the last 2 weeks, where he scored, you know, he was the top overall scoring quarterback in both those weeks, I believe, certainly last week, and I think the week before too. So yeah, he's absolutely doing it. I think the absence of a real running game between the 20s is playing out to where, you know, they are really, they're relying on Brady more between the 20s. And he's also been very prominently featured in the red zone again after he was not Week 1. So yeah, it's all systems go for Brady. I think we also saw last week, I mean, granted the game was a lot closer than many anticipated, but this is going to happen in the NFL sometimes. Like, you know, even a 14-point spread doesn't necessarily, you're going to mean you're up by so much that you change your plan, right? So as of right now, I'm very interested in playing Brady. I love taking the safety at a safe position with the guy who's been the most, you know, the highest upside play easily at the position so far.
They're only -9 favorites. I say only -9 because, you know, they were huge favorites last week. They were -14, I think, going into Houston. And what we've seen from Well, really, two things have emerged, right? One is the offense is still firing on all cylinders pretty much, but the defense is awful, right? The New England defense this year has been one of the worst, if not the worst, defense in the entire league, just in terms of letting up opposing points. I mean, they let Houston put up like 30 on them. So, and Houston, you know, has legit nobody, and they're a rookie quarterback and a wide receiver one, and that's kind of it. That's a disturbing sign for their defense. Now, they are minus 9 against Cam and the very banged up Panthers right now. My guess is Kelvin Benjamin doesn't play. We already know Olsen is out. But this defense, man, the line really reflects, I think, that it's going to stay a little closer than – well, it's definitely going to stay close. Vegas thinks it stays closer than last week. The Panthers offense isn't all that good, so it leaves a lot to be desired. I don't know. It's going to be really close for me. I think in the end, you need to make a lot of other concessions down the rest of your lineup if you pay at least $9,500 for him or $8,000 really. But in terms of consistency and just in terms of overall gameplay, it's really hard to argue. After him, I went down to Carson Palmer. Now, Palmer, I don't love Carson Palmer. He's tough to watch. He throws a lot of weird passes. The accuracy is not there. But without David Johnson this year, Arizona has been running a lot more. Or excuse me, they've been forced to pass a lot more. They really can't run. The Andre Ellington, Chris Johnson, Kerwin, very, very quick failed the Kerwin Williams experiment is basically over. It's really just the volume on Palmer. He plays a San Francisco team that's still playing at a pretty fast pace. Am I crazy here to think that Palmer, even at 7,400 on FanDuel, I mean, it's 2,000 less than Brady, 6,100 on DraftKings. And the theme on DraftKings is going to be kind of cheap quarterbacks, I think. But where do you see Palmer fitting in terms of just a guy you can rely on for cash games?
Well, he's averaged 310 passing yards a game this season, which is totally serviceable. Like, definitely nothing to turn your nose up at. The accuracy has been a little bit of a concern for me. You know, like, if you look at his three games, 60% was his best accuracy across those games, and that's pretty troubling. I think that could point to the fact that the interceptions, you know, that might be more real than bad luck. Like, sometimes we see a guy with a 66% completion rate getting four interceptions this early in the season, and people tend to overrate it. I think with Palmer, it could be an ongoing concern throughout the season. I did like to see him go back to Larry Fitzgerald more last game. I think those kind of short passing routes are going to be really fundamental to him providing value from week to week, and you really can't complain about the attempts, right? I mean, 48 pass attempts last game, 36 the game before that, and 48 the game before that. That's on pace to be the type of guy who would have the most at the end of the season. So in terms of sheer opportunity, you've got to really like it. The issue I guess I have with Palmer overall is not so much him in and of himself, but this incredibly large cluster of quarterbacks around the same price. So you go from Brady at 9,500, then you go down to Matt Ryan at 8,000. I can't recall the last time we had such a wide spread in the most expensive quarterback to the second most expensive quarterback. And then from there, it's basically every quarterback in the NFL. And then you go to Carson Palmer at 7,400 and Phil Rivers at 7,400. And then a bunch of dudes you would never consider playing. But it's like basically every quarterback in the NFL is between 7,000 and 8,000 this week, except for Tom Brady. So I think you kind of just get to pick one. Like, I don't know that the 600 from Palmer to Ryan is enough to make up for the fact that one is Carson Palmer and Matt Ryan. But I don't know. What are you feeling about that really tight price cluster?
Well, this is, and like I said, I struggled to write up, I struggled to find value that was so crystal and stood out to me, right? Like, that was kind of the theme. It took me longer to write the picks yesterday than it had probably for like the last 2 weeks combined, I think, just because I just spent a lot of time sifting through these names because everything looked all pretty damn close. And I think that's going to be, and I think if things all look pretty close, you know, in terms of our system or on paper going in, this is kind of why I mentioned, I think you see these ownership percentages just a little bit lower. The reason I wrote a Palmer over Ryan was because Ryan just hasn't really been throwing that much this year. They just haven't had to throw the ball.
And that was a problem last year,
yep,
too.
And so when at some point the volume just, I know the guy's amazingly consistent, but we've seen already this year, when a couple of those red zone touchdowns turned to Devontae Freeman instead of through the air, all of a sudden a guy like Ryan is just not as fantasy viable in that 8,000 range. That's a very specific reason I did not write Ryan up and I wrote Palmer up, right? Because
how about Russell Wilson? Russell Wilson, I think, could be another guy that could jump to the top of that list. Vegas likes Seattle, enormous favorites over Indy this week, second highest implied total, again, 1,600 cheaper than Brady for 1.5 fewer points. He's running the ball a bit. You think Russell Wilson sneaks in any cash?
The reason I didn't write him up, I should have put a note in, is because I'm worried that Doug Baldwin's not going to play. And so if Baldwin didn't play, then I think that really knocks Wilson. I'll put a note in the article. But that was my concern specifically with him as well. I know the matchup's great too. This is what I mean. These quarterbacks just are all kind of all in the same range. So I easily could have flipped a couple narratives and written either Ryan or Wilson up, but those are the specific reasons I left them both off the list. I just didn't actually put it in the article. And I should also say that we are focusing strictly on the main slate. There are a lot of good plays that are not coming on this main slate, especially if you consider DraftKings, which is not... And that's the other reason I left off Wilson, was because he's not on the DraftKings main slate because he's that Sunday night game that they decided to X out this week. So I should put a note in the article that some of the reasoning. But if you look at the schedule, right, like you're not getting Aaron Rodgers on the main slate. He plays Thursday. You don't get Drew Brees at the 9:30 game on Sunday morning. If you play in DraftKings, you don't get Russell Wilson because he's Sunday night. And then you miss out on the Alex Smith and really just the Chiefs contingent and Cousins too to some degree at 8:30. There's a lot of good quarterbacks that are not coming on your Sunday 1 to 4 o'clock. So a lot of that stuff kind of mashed up into this list. The next two guys I wrote on the list. It's interesting. I wrote these guys, I labeled them as a cheap guys, and I had the same label for running back. But Tyrod Taylor and Deshaun Watson, these are really just strictly DraftKings plays. I don't think I would play Tyrod or Deshaun at 7,300 for any kind of safety means on FanDuel. But the price difference is so great on DraftKings that I think you actually can consider it. Now, the thing with both of these guys is, if you think that running quarterbacks raise your floor, and they do, because the ability to get out and run, getting either of these guys.
Yeah, you get 0.1 points per yard and 0.25 points per pass or whatever, right? So that already, or I'm sorry, the opposite is true. If you get 100 passing yards, you get 4 points, and if you get 100 running yards, you get 10 points. Would be the easier way, right? So you can accumulate points much faster on the ground than you can through the air.
Let me start with Watson. I mean, he had a great week last week against New England. We said New England, and this, I don't think this is chicken and the egg. I think New England's defense is just this bad, right? It was his second week in, so maybe he's slightly more comfortable in the pocket. He does have a wide receiver one at his disposal. Do you see Deshaun at 5,100? That's about as cheap as you'll ever get it for a quarterback that has shown that he can do something. Do you think we can even consider playing these guys in cash and paying up in other positions just based on their ability to run?
Well, you can consider anything, I guess. I think doing so, you have to understand that you're going to take on a much higher coefficient of variation than you would for spending up at other positions, or spending up at quarterback and then kind of hedging at other positions. Now, DraftKings always gets tricky because very frequently you have to take somebody who's going to be pretty questionable or somewhat erratic. That's just kind of how they priced their game. Taking that risk at your quarterback position, I think is going to be, it's going to feel tricky. You're going to expose yourself to, I don't know. So like looking at the lineup, if I lock in Deshaun Watson now, you're going to roll with Dalvin Cook, Emmanuel Sanders, Charles Clay at tight end, DeAndre Hopkins at 6,400. Like you're going to expose yourself to some risk even with Deshaun Watson, I guess is my major overall point. And I also just think he could go off for 60 yards and a touchdown, or he could just have 40 yards and go 15 for 20 for 125 yards like he did in week two and not get that touchdown. And then we could be in a pretty pretty hurt after that. So I can see where it would be viable from a strictly EV perspective. Like if you can pin down the exact right stats on Watson, I guess my problem is as a projector and someone who's tried to do this for quite a long time, it's so hard to know what the baseline inputs should be on Watson, right? Like he goes last week for 66%, 8 rushes for 41 yards. The previous week he goes 15 for 24, but only 125 yards, and then 67 yards and a touch. So I don't know. I don't know what the baseline inputs should be on him, so it's so hard to evaluate.
Yeah, no. If you take that week three example, he actually went 3x on this price because he did 67 rushing yards and a touchdown. Now, again, you can't lock that in every week, but if you can, if there's some threat that he can do both on a given week, either or on a given week, depending sort of how the game is going, I really don't mind it. I looked at this for a while yesterday. Again, it's very risky. Tennessee defense is much better than New England's, probably on par with Cincinnati this year, and probably worse than Jacksonville, though that was his first game and he was coming in off the bench because Savage had started. But yeah, it's really just the price. 5,100. I think if you're locking in 5,100, he has the rushing yards that he has this year, 124. It would be like a top 30 running back on the season. I know that's not great, but he's also a quarterback. So it's close for me. Tyrod falls into the same category. He's been running a ton as well. His accuracy accurate. The good news on him is his completion percentage is up this season, which I find to be a really good sign, sort of along his progression as a quarterback. It's still not great, but this would represent his best, I believe, his best passing season of his career if he kind of just plays out the string the rest of the way along the lines of how he's been doing it so far. So Taylor gets he's going up against Atlanta. He gets a game where likely they'll be playing catch up. The same cases for him I kind of made for Deshaun is that he can run. I think they're going to be playing a little bit of catch up. The accuracy is just enough there, and the price is only $200 more than Watson.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, he falls into the same exact category for me as Watson does. Like, I think we have a longer track record on Taylor, and we can kind of know what to expect from him a little bit better. And we've seen how that goes. You know, sometimes it turns into like 20 fantasy points like he had in week one. Sometimes it turns into 10 like he had in week two. And so as long as you're willing to accept that level of risk, I think it's justifiable. For me, it feels a lot more like a big tournament thing. Like, I'm scrolling down the list a little bit. I think I'd prefer even Carson Palmer at 6,100 against San Francisco. Feels like I'm paying an extra $1,000 for a much higher degree of safety and certainty, but I can understand people being willing to take on the risk.
Tyrod Taylor's 67% completion percentage does put him in the top 10 in that stat this season. So encouraging sign for him moving forward. The wide receiver unit for him is not necessarily better, but again, if he's just getting better as a quarterback, I don't mind the spot, especially if he's playing catch up. All right, let's move on to running backs.
Are we really ready to say he's getting like that much better though? I mean, I guess his completion percentage hasn't been terrible in the past. I don't know.
I'm just saying it is better. I'm not saying that I'm not saying that he's better than he has been in the past. I'm just saying the number this year has been better than he's ever shown in the past, and that's an encouraging sign. And they haven't actually had the best matchups in the world either. So, I just take it as an encouraging sign. I'm not willing to just put a stamp of approval. Like, I fully expect guys like Aaron Rodgers and Stafford and Rivers and Tom Brady and these guys to finish with higher completion percentages than him. You know, those guys all
sit. Well, yeah, we're comparing it to price, which I understand right. For sure. I think it's, you know, completion percentage is one thing, but if you throw fewer passes than your contemporaries, you should have a higher completion percentage, right? So he has 187 passing yards per game so far this year. Last year he had 201, the year before that 217. So like, I think if you're going for Taylor, you're probably taking him for his rushing rather than his passing. But
that's exactly why these two guys are falling in this. I'm willing to write these guys up in the 5,000 range and not some of the other guys like Trevor Siemian or whatnot, because the running makes that big of a difference, I think, to their overall baseline floor projection. And that's really what I'm looking to get in cash. All right, running back. Let's keep moving here. Running back. I wrote up a couple of more expensive guys here to start looking in the realm of home favorites, which we know is just one way that we can sort of, I would say, start weeding out some of the plays on a given week. We want our team, or we want our bell cow guys to be winning a game so they can kind of grind out the clock. Ezekiel Elliott falls strictly into that camp here. You know, came off a disastrous week two against Denver where just kind of everything went wrong. Kind of bounced back in some degree last week against Arizona where they at least gave him the ball and got the win. Dallas barely even ran any plays last week. They barely threw the ball. They ran the ball. And they didn't really run the ball a ton. They just kind of did what they had to do, scored on all their drives and kind of called it a day. Zeke at 8,500 against a Rams defense that has let up some yards on the ground. You know, we saw what Carlos Hyde did to them last week. Do you think that Elliott becomes maybe even a chalk play here, at least on FanDuel at 8,500, where, you know, there's very few guys in the elite volume category that actually, you know, can throw out results here? Elliott strikes me as one of them. Where do you see him falling maybe in ownership percentages this week?
Yeah, I really like Elliott quite a bit. I think the Rams represent a very nice matchup for him. I think the attempts they're very, very solid. But more than that, I'd like him better just from a safety perspective than, say, like Leonard Fournette has more attempts than him. But I don't know that we can count on that in the same way we can count on it from Elliott. I think if you're just comparing him to the other big money options on this slate, he kind of pretty easily falls in the safest spot for me. Like Freeman, the opportunity is fairly low. It's very touchdown dependent. Bell has been getting more opportunity, but it's been much more variable than it has been in seasons past. And, you know, he was very touchdown reliant last week in order to pay his very expensive price. So I think if you're just comparing him apples to apples among other expensive RBs, he's easily the best of that group. And that's going to make him worth something in a season where safety at running back has been at a huge premium. We talked about it yesterday's podcast, but with 13 receivers going for 100 yards or more and just five running backs going for 100 yards or more last week, guys like Elliott become that much more valuable to me. So yeah, I really like him a lot.
You know, in non-adjusted DVOA from Football Outsiders, the Rams ranked 19th. Now, again, that's like not adjusted for opponent yet. I don't think they start adjusting for that after, until after week four. So take that with somewhat of a grain of salt. But now I see Elliott as, you know, Dallas has made their intentions really clear about how they want to play this out, especially too if he were to get suspended. I mean, they're not going to have him for very long. So that's going to be 2 weeks away till they find out if that appeal case is won or lost. So I think they're just content to keep running him basically all the way into the ground. It makes no sense from an organizational standpoint, I don't think, if you're worried about a guy's long-term health, like where are you going to be four seasons from now. But for the current day, minus six going in here at home against the Rams, I think I on the main slate, mostly because like guys like Kareem Hunt aren't available, I do think that Elliott probably is the highest owned running back, though it's going to be a little close. I actually think it's going to be close here with the second guy I wrote up, which is Devontae Freeman. Now Atlanta comes as minus eight favorites against Buffalo, who also in non-adjusted DVOA has been okay against the run, but Freeman's gotten a lot of touches this season. They've been content to give him the ball in the red zone as well. He's following up a great 2016 campaign. Do you think that Atlanta, just considering the way, you know, this game script could work out, you know, them being big favorites, the way they've been using Freeman, do you think he could be in for a big day?
Certainly could be. The thing you love about Freeman is that he's the definitive goal line back for his team. And, you know, Vegas obviously likes the Atlanta to put up a lot of points and beat Buffalo pretty handily here. I think if you look at Freeman over his last couple seasons, he's basically been the same guy both years, right? You know, exactly 11 touchdowns in both of those seasons. He has run hotter than that this season so far, so I would want to temper my enthusiasm there. But his attempts actually went down from 2015 to 2016. I don't know if that would be indicative of some longer-term organizational plan or just kind of experimenting with Tevin Coleman, but I'm not quite sold just yet on them going back through the roof the other direction. Obviously, he's been very involved in the passing game in the past, and this year that's also taken a step down. So just that trajectory would be 97 targets in 2015, 65 targets last year, and now just seven targets over three games. So kind of what you've picked up in rush attempts, you've lost in targets. And all that taken together has me, I think, less bullish on Freeman than maybe you are. Like, again, if I had to compare him to Elliott here, I would personally play Elliott. I also think Elliott has maybe a bigger opponent advantage than it appears at first glance. Yeah, the Rams are 19th in DVOA, but their strength of schedule so far has been pretty weak. Like, they played against I had this open a second ago. Yeah, they played against San Francisco, terrible offense. Washington, who's a good offense. But then Indianapolis with Tolson, just an awful, awful offense. And so the fact that they're ranking 19th, given that schedule, leads me to believe they're going to be more like a bottom five defense when it all shakes out. So I'll take Elliott over Freeman. I certainly understand the case. Freeman has arguably more upside thanks to his red zone usage, but I just think Elliott's the safer option.
Oh, 100%. They're both the same price, $8,500. I think Elliott's clearly the play over him. And, you know, it's a question of whether you can play them together. It's probably going to be close on that unless you went super cheap a quarterback. I can see a scenario where people do play Dalvin Cook this week. He's been getting elite. He's been getting elite touches. He's 1,000 less than both. I easily could have written him up as well. I just didn't, because at some point you just got to sort of pick a lane and then roll down it. Then this is not the
same. Cook. I would prefer Cook to Freeman personally if I were looking for safety, even that poor week two performance notwithstanding.
Yeah, there was no line out in the game, which kind of spooked me a little bit, because I think they were still just kind of wondering. Detroit is a better defense than they faced last week, so I'm just a little concerned. That's my only real concern, about just like not having all the full breadth of information on a guy like Cook going into the week, and that was sort of another reason why I left him off the list. And then I went into two cheap guys here, you know, sort of the same theme as we went on DraftKings, which is Chris Carson and Joe Mixon. Now, Carson I probably should not have put on here, because again, he didn't qualify into that DraftKings main slate, but he kind of went on there anyway. And Joe Mixon, both these guys have seen increased opportunity over the last 2 weeks, where, you know, the teams have been struggling with the run game. Mixon obviously was a sort of controversial draft pick in the sense that he had some off the field problems, but no one in the NFL really ever seems to care about that part of it, so he gets drafted.
that must make him really unusual. You think the other guys in the locker room are like, what's up with Mixon, man? He's kind of got some off the field problems.
What a jerk. Oh,
guys, let's go to book club, dude. Let's forget about Mixon. Let's leave him behind.
Guy's an absolute jerk. He gets to face against Cleveland. You know, he did completely outsnap guys like Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill last week. Chris Carson was sort of rolling down that same way. They've had Procise as the third down back, but Thomas Rawls was a complete zero non-factor. Does look like Carson is going to be the guy. You know, where do you see coming in? I'm paying FanDuel Mixon at $5,600. That is really cheap against a Cleveland team that, you know, we've seen that you can run. Even Frank Gore was able to run a little bit against them last week, and then Indianapolis as well for Carson. Where do you see these guys falling in the cheap? Like, can we pay all the way down a running back for guys with opportunity, maybe in the high teens worth of carries? Is it worth going the punt route on these guys?
It might be. I'm pretty gun shy about that. I think generally speaking, if you compare two lineups to one another, and even if you're getting like a hair's breadth less expectation, but a little bit more safety, I tend to lean in that direction for cash game purposes. With Mixon, you know, he kind of reminds me of like Rashard Higgins from last week, or just countless guys from the past, even Chris Carson from last week, frankly, where, you know, a guy comes up, has some opportunity with the team, does okay, and then kind of goes back to where he came from, which is generally obscurity. So, you know, Carson went from week one, no touches, week two, 20 touches and two targets, back to last week, 11 rushes and two targets. And I think Mixon is a big, like as big a threat as anyone to go in that direction. You know, Bernard and Hill, they were the two-headed monster before Mixon sort of appeared out of nowhere. You know, Mixon did have a little bit better of a track record than Carson did, 11 and 10 touches respectively, weeks one and two. But I don't know, like it's going to, that I feel like you're putting a lot of eggs in a pretty uncertain basket, especially given the fact that even though he had a lot of touches against Green Bay, he generally sucked. So yeah, DraftKings, he's a little cheaper. On FanDuel, though, it's going to be hard for me to feel like I'm, or to feel confident pulling that trigger.
Where Mixon's getting a boost in our system is that Seattle's such huge favorites here. They're minus 13 against Indianapolis, and we do have a great, you know, we have like a gradient system on multipliers as you get further away, if you get more likely toward a blowout. So, you know, minus 13 is really implying that a game is well in hand for a certain team. The way we have multipliers set up for that is to sort of like give boost to the running backs in that situation, because those in, you know, historically are the guys that sort of end the game, and just they do see increased touches. That's where Mixon is getting that, you know, not insignificant bump from that. Like, we don't even have him for outsized carries, but it's just seeing this as, you know, maybe he goes from 11 carries to 15 or 16, and all of a sudden against an Indianapolis defense that's not looking too bad. Sort of Mixon doesn't fall into the same camp. I just do think he has more opportunity, and I'm really encouraged the fact that they used him in the passing game as well last week. 16 total touches for him last week with the announcement ahead of time that that he was going to see an increased role. And the difference between, you know, him seeing an increased role, let's say like Kerwin Williams filling in for DJ, is that, you know, this guy was drafted in the high rounds to just like at some point take over the running back duties. That's where I see that situation. You know, Carson doesn't necessarily fall into that same camp. He seems to be like maybe last man standing in Seattle. Like, they've just been a couple years of just like not knowing who their guy was going to be, and maybe he's just like the guy that's left over. Mixon strikes me as more of like a pedigree guy, just in terms of like the team drafted him high with the idea to use him at some point, and this could be maybe a changing the guard situation. So I think between the two of them, I would prefer Mixon. I just think Carson is in such a plus game script. All right, let's go to, or no, you know, hit us up with the sponsor real quick, and then we'll head over to receiver.
Awesome. Let's talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor has been a longstanding partner at DFSR, a very trustworthy, you know, good site where you can go and play salary cap game formats like you're used to, except the big thing you'll notice they're missing are all the really big stakes, big money pros. Fantasy Factor is perfect for casual players or just people who only want to play $50 to $100 per contest. You can get all the action you'd want at those rates, without having to crash into VIP Doug Norrie. VIP on any site you want, Doug Norrie. He won't be there probably putting in his lineups on Fantasy Factor because the reason for that is it just doesn't really scale, right? Like, there's no point in making lineups with a totally different salary cap if you can only put in $100 or $200 worth if you're normally playing thousands elsewhere. So check out FantasyFactor.com. Really good site, trustworthy guys. Again, great software, slick like you're used to, and a great place to make some money. So check them out, tell them we sent you, and enjoy.
I do think receiver this week is a position that we are going to see some pretty solid ownership percentages because of the way things break down. We talked about this in the recap yesterday about AJ Green, just about my thoughts, but thoughts on where he would land, at least on FanDuel, in terms of chalk. He was complete chalk last week. absolutely crushed for everybody, and enters in the week with another great matchup. Really nothing else changed. Like, nothing else changed except we're even more confident in AJ Green's probably touches and uses for the Cincinnati team. Do you think, I don't want to spend too much time, you can go back and listen to our recap from yesterday on the week, but AJ Green, in terms of chalk on FanDuel, do you think he's there? And then also, you know, side to that, is 8,600 almost too much to pay for him on DraftKings?
Yeah, I think it's too much to pay for him on DraftKings. I think just because, you know, pricing tends to be tighter anyway, and I don't think he's quite back in that slam dunk number one wide receiver territory. Also, just on the possession side, like, he tends to be more of a big play receiver generally than a possession guy, and possession guys tend to be who you want to pay up more for on DraftKings simply due to the fact that you get the full point per reception. It is a nice matchup here against Cleveland. I think the game script could potentially work against his favor, but it shouldn't matter very much. I mean, he's been the focal point of that Cincinnati offense. 10, 8, and 13 targets in the first 3 weeks of the season. Obviously capped that off with 10 receptions and the touchdown last week. I think everything's heading in the right direction for Green. He's actually running more of those short routes, which you really like to see in terms of raising his floor. So, yeah, not a whole lot to see here, since Cleveland should continue to be a worse passing defense without Joe Hayden, and just a bad team in general. So I think it's a green light on Green. No pun intended, actually. And I really like him here.
That was awesome.
That was a really embarrassing pun. I didn't mean to make it. It just came out, and then I felt badly about myself. So.
Actually, I'm going to put that into the article, Green Light on Green. That's gold, man. That's really good. I think the other guy that's going to be a chalk play is Larry Fitz. You know, after a down week two, you know, we saw elite targets share for him week one. Down week two, that was a little bit disappointing. Bounces back in a huge way in week three with, you know, double digit targets again. And I there's been things I've read this about him that he tends to have the last couple of years. He's had a decline over the course of the season, and some people suspect it's because of age. I mean, the guy's old. 34 years in NFL years is like, I don't know, 110 or something like that. It's really old to be this old, especially at like a skill position where you need to be running routes. But, you know, Arizona has been throwing the ball more because they just can't run the ball. Do you think he becomes, you know, sort of like that de facto short possession running, you know, just running game, de facto running game receiver, sort of, you know what I mean? But just going forward, just because they're going to need his possession abilities to move the chain. And then with that in mind, 6,700 on FanDuel, 61 on DraftKings. Does he come in as complete chalk this week?
I think so. I mean, people were really in on Fitzgerald the first 2 weeks of the season. Obviously, we didn't really get to see the industry opinion on him last week because he wasn't on the main slate. But I think after last week's rebound against Dallas, I do think we'll see people trusting him once again. I think people were content with his 13 targets and 6 receptions and 74 yards week one on these prices, and then we're pretty disappointed with the performance against Indianapolis. But seeing Arizona go right back to the board here and get him 15 targets for 13 catches, I think will make him overwhelming chalk. I mean, wide receiver is just the other place where you can tend to pay down a little bit and still get some safety, and I think in people's minds right now, Fitzgerald really represents that. I do think some casual players will be once bitten and twice shy based on the week two performance, but overall, it's nothing to be worried about. I think they've been pretty clear in 2 out of the 3 weeks that they hope for him to be a double-digit target guy, and that's where I project him to be as well.
Yep, and that was with, you know, that Jaron Brown and JJ Nelson were both active for this game as well, and he still saw those targets. So I feel totally comfortable with the 6,700 price tag for him on FanDuel. I think everyone else will too. Like I said, I do believe he ends up probably as the most owned play there. Even 6,100 on DraftKings, his conversion rate is so high, and that PPR, the overall PPR on this amount of targets is really what you want to see. We just have him ranked so high, and I just think that that's the case too. Now, the problem with guys paying 6,100 for a guy like him on DraftKings is that you are going to need to start really making some concessions elsewhere. Like, you're not going to be able to start. You really can only do that so many times till you are punting somewhere else. Like, you're not playing an Ezekiel Elliott or someone else ranked up in that upper tier of pricing, or, you know, playing a Tom Brady at quarterback, because at that point you're just allocating too much to salary. So it might get a little close for him there where the pricing is tighter. I still think he is probably one of the highest owned receivers. I put the next two guys into the same class of seeing a ton of targets, just can't catch the damn ball. Now, whether they can't catch the damn ball because it's the quarterback play or because it's just kind of in their makeup, you know, some guys just some guys have drops. Like, we've seen this with Amari Cooper for the Raiders. This guy has had more balls hit his hands this year than he's dropped. Those have not been bad targets. Now, I haven't examined all of Amari Cooper's targets, but I've seen him drop personally five balls at least this year. Sanders and Hopkins don't strike me as the exact same case. They're playing with worse quarterbacks. Where do we fit these guys into the cash game GPP sort of strategy? They're, again, elite target share, just crazy bad conversion rates.
Yeah, I mean, Sanders, I wouldn't blame the drops on Sanders. I think that, we saw in 2014, he had 141 targets for 101 catches. And then the very next season, he had 76 catches on 137 targets. So I think it's more a case of quarterback play for him. Not that it really matters for our purposes. Like, all we're trying to figure out is if the conversion rate is legit. And with Sanders, it is. I mean, we now have two seasons in a row with nearly identical target to reception ratios, where 2015 he had 137 targets and 76 receptions, and last year he had 137 targets and 79 receptions. So it's you pretty much know what you're getting here, which is definitely a subpar conversion rate. The yards per reception should still be pretty decent. I mean, they're down a little bit this year, but that conversion rate is right on line with what you'd expect. And so, you're going to get some really high upside games in that framework. You're going to get some really terrible games as well. I think for big tournaments, you absolutely should be willing to take on that level of risk. I think, you're getting a $6,900 receiver who in week two scored 21 fantasy points and kind of made it look easy. But you're also getting a guy for week one who had three receptions for 26 yards. So just know that you're taking on a lot of risk with Sanders. Hopefully, what you're hoping for here is that Oakland jumps out with their strong offense and kind of gets on the board, and that Denver moves away from CJ Anderson, and that they put it more in the hand of Sanders, because, he has functioned as a possession receiver in the past too. So kind of mixed on Sanders. Again, not a cash game play in my mind. And Hopkins is pretty much the same exact thing.
Real quick, back to Sanders. Interesting to note here, Denver is actually favored in this game. They actually have a pretty high implied total, all things considered. I think this says more about Oakland's defense than it does about Denver's offense. But 25 implied points for Denver is about as high as you're going to see them. Unless there's like some, Vegas sees some great shift in the way their offensive unit is working. But 25 implied points from Denver in a thin spread game does have me liking Sanders.
Oh, totally. Well, and Oakland should yield to more possessions too, right? Because they're going to be theoretically passing, and passing tends to lead to guys getting out of bounds more drops and clock stops and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, the pace of this game should be great. And I guess Fitzgerald and Sanders are the same exact price on DraftKings. I mean, you talked about being gun shy about paying up for Fitzgerald. Would you rather pay for Sanders over Fitzgerald?
Well, it's funny because right now our top lineups have both of them in it. So it's good. And actually, they have Fitzgerald, Sanders, and Hopkins all in it. So this is what I mean about it. Just like coming in as a weird week. Now, believe me, if you're listening to this podcast, I do not think this is where it's going to end up. Like we haven't drilled down too much in just like what the actual lineups look like yet. Like, we spend the first part of the week just making sure all the inputs are correct, and then sort of wading through what the lineups look like, because on these little edge decisions, I don't think it ends up that way now. But the fact that it's even showing up early like that means that there is something, I think, to some of the pace of games that you're going to see here. If I were to choose between the two of them, I would clearly choose Fitzgerald. Like, if I only had a slot for a $6,100 receiver, at least for a cash game play, I would definitely only choose Fitz. But it's closer than I would have imagined after looking at how some of the projections have shaken out. The other guy I said obviously was here was Hopkins. Hopkins lowered targets last week, but increased conversion percentage. Do you take that as a good sign for him going forward? I believe he converted 7 of 8 targets last week. Good sign for him going forward after 2 weeks now with Watson.
Yeah, I think so. It was kind of a strange week. They weren't playing catch up, so they were taking fewer risks. I think that yielded, more high value opportunities for Hopkins, or rather more consistent opportunity. Generally speaking, we don't like to see the targets decline every week of the season from 16 to 13 to 8. But if it's going to make Houston more competitive to play that way, then I think it can only be a good thing. I think with Hopkins, too, we pointed this out on prior podcasts, but the fact that he and Watson just weren't on the same page was leading to a lot of those targets not turning into receptions, or just turning into no chance situations where the ball sails over your head and they're kind of like doing the patting my chest, it was my bad sort of thing. I think if that happens less often, the conversion percentage can only go up as the season progresses. So yeah, I think overall it was a very encouraging game against New England. He's still cheap relative to what he can do when things break right. And listen, he's got double-digit fantasy points every game this season just because the volume has been so high. So if you take the three-game stretch so far, even with the crappy conversion rate, and his floor on DraftKings has been 14.3 fantasy points. That's the level of risk you're absolutely willing to accept on these prices. So, yeah, I think I'm okay on Hopkins. I prefer, in a vacuum, I prefer Hopkins to Sanders, I believe, even though I know he is a little bit more expensive.
Yeah, no, I think we have them projected for, I mean, basically the same. I mean, right around 14 points. So there's some decimal point differences in favor of Sanders, but it's really that's the difference of like a tenth of a target or something like that. This is the difference between their overall projection. I'm with you. I think I would trust Hopkins in this situation over him. Let's finish it off with tight end. You know, I wrote up Zach Ertz. I don't really know what I mean. The next week I stop playing, Zach Ertz is going to be the first. We've played him just about every single week to start, the year. I just don't see that changing anytime soon. He's been the clear target guy over there in Philadelphia. He's been the clear target guy in terms of like what a tight end can produce. So, you know, when we look at targets for tight ends, he leads the league with 28. Witten behind him at 26, and that's the other guy I wrote up. And then you go down to Gronk at 25, and then then you really drop off. You have like a 25% drop off to the next group of guys who are, I find them to all just be just kind of dartboard sort of tight ends that you kind of hope they catch a touchdown. Even some of these guys are names, and I still don't think they're anywhere close to Ertz. I mean, is Ertz just going to be – I mean, I guess at what point does the price catch up with them? I think that's really the only question I'm asking now, because the price is clearly – he was clearly mispriced week one on DraftKings at 3,500. That's since been well corrected. But he's now 6,900. He's the second most expensive tight end behind only Gronk. At what point do you think the price catches up with him? Like, are we getting close to the price catching up with him?
Yeah, I think we're getting there. You know, he's been so excellent for the first 3 weeks relative to the other tight ends in particular that I think it's still worth the price. But as soon as you start getting into the 7,000s, you start having to compare him. Like, even if you compare him to like Larry Fitzgerald, say, if they played the same position, I think you'd play Larry Fitzgerald. But the fact that you have so few other options just means he's going to be a play for most people here. So yeah, right now he's the guy at tight end. At some point though, it will become too expensive. Like every tight end, will be back to the poo-poo platter drawing board.
Yeah, the positional scarcity at tight end is nuts. I mean, and then you add that into, you've had him and Gronk have been really the only two good ones. And then, you know, you want Kelce to be good, but he's coming off a week. And I know he's not on the main slate, but he's coming off a week where he only saw 1 yard on one target. And look, that's going to be very rare, and I'm, you know, he'll very likely, without, you know, short of injury, does not end any game anywhere close to that in terms of just his overall usage. But when you get that happening to a top two or three tight end like Kelce is, it really shows you that this position is so highly volatile. And you know, I wrote up Ertz, and the other guy I wrote up, like I said, was Witten. Witten has seen, you know, he saw a decrease in targets last week to only four, though I would, you know, caution people to not look too into that. I think Dallas only threw the ball like 18 total times. Like, they just didn't need to throw the ball. His target percentage was still pretty good. It was just that they just chose not to throw the ball at all because they simply didn't need to. You know, in terms of a price play, can you see us kind of just paying down for Witten in this spot, and maybe paying up for some of the other skill positions just because we think Ertz's number is just getting kind of out of bounds?
Yeah, I think so. I think Witten, you know, given that you have to pay so much less for him, you're obviously taking on quite a bit more volatility, but he was excellent the first 2 weeks of the season. And that game against Arizona, you know, being Monday night, was kind of a weird situation. I will say that we have seen volatility from Witten in the past. Like, this isn't unusual for him the last few years with Dak Prescott. So I think the first two games of the season will be among his best when we look back at it at the end of the season. But if he settles more into the guy who catches six balls for 71 yards and no touchdowns, that's still perfectly acceptable in these prices. So definitely a worthwhile pivot. I think you'll see a lot of people go in that direction. And I think, you know, with a gun to my head, if I had to pick who was going to score more points this week, Ertz or Witten, I would ask to not choose. So given that it's that close in my mind, I think Ertz is a more reliable option, but I'm not sure that increase in safety is worth an extra $1,200 if you can apportion it, you know, and upgrade from a $6,800 wide receiver to AJ Green, you know. So that's going to be the decision that we're going to have to make as the game actually approaches.
And I do think you see people just kind of go that dartboard territory with tight ends, which also could be correct, like in the lower tier, just kind of hoping for, you know, five and a half you can't get a half a target, but, you know, average around five and a half targets, 50 yards, and then try to luck box your way into a touchdown. All right, dfsr.com/NFL gets you that free 3-day trial, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month. After that, to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, NBA, MLB, all of it covered under one package. So go check that out. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. We'll be back again tomorrow breaking down every game for week four in the NFL. Buddy, sorry that I didn't write anything down on the calendar that I own, but I will talk to you tomorrow.
Look forward to it, too.